Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
Aim and I have been working with global corporates and startups on what we term innovative new value chains, which are connecting new technologies, ventures, and corporates with new business models in the transport and energy sectors, as electric vehicles will revolutionize many industries. This podcast is one of a series where I speak to leading executives who are making the important transition to sustainable future. We have been working in the UK, Europe, and with programs in leading locations such as in Oslo and China, where there are high penetrations of EVs and massive numbers. Do get in touch if you would like to find out more, and don't forget to subscribe for future podcasts. Thank you.
So today for Goals Question Time, I've got the pleasure of being joined by Angela Holzberg, who's head of sustainable mobility at Inca Group, which is formerly known as the IKEA Group. So Angela, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I've heard you speak at conferences and seen some of the fantastic work you've been doing within the group. It'd be great if you could kick off with a brief introduction to yourself first, please.
Right, so I'm Angela, and like you said, Head of Sustainable Mobility at Inca Group. And what that means is basically that my job is to make sure that everything that moves within this company, goods, customers, and co-workers move in a sustainable way. That's my elevator pitch. So I focus a lot on last mile deliveries, on co-worker commutes, and business travel, but then also on how our customers get to IKEA and back.
Fantastic. And your background, what did you do with a degree? What was your previous experience before you're now sorting out all this mobility?
Well, it didn't have anything to do with sustainable mobility, I can tell you that. My first job was actually as a tax consultant at PwC. So I went to law school at Lund University, and I specialized in international corporate taxes. So it's been a bit of a ride. It's not a straight line to where I started, to where I am. But I left PwC to join Scania. I did their trainee program, and then I ended up as a project leader at IKEA Transport. And then working at IKEA, sustainability is a very present topic in everything you do. So after a few years, I just realized that I don't want to do anything else but sustainability, and they let me. So that's how I ended up here.
Excellent. Great. Well, so if you could give an introduction to our listeners first about Inca Group and IKEA then, please, because of understand the difference and what the scale of your operation is.
Yeah, that might be a bit confusing. It's confusing even from the inside. But IKEA, you can say, is basically split in two. So we have Inter-IKEA Range and Supply, who act as the franchisor. Then we have Inca IKEA, where I then work, Inca Group. And we are the biggest franchisee in IKEA. So we own and operate 374 stores. Actually, there might be more now. We've had a few openings since that number. But let's say 380 IKEA stores across 30 countries. We have roughly 840 million visits to our stores, 500 million visits to our centers, and then we have 2.5 billion visits to IKEA.com. So that's sort of the reach of our operations.
So massive global scale operation, and you've set the bold and necessary targets for sustainability to move to total electric?
Yes, we have a target of reaching 100% electric or zero emission deliveries by 2025 globally. So it's quite an ambitious target.
So how have you moved to implement this electric delivery?
Well, it's an IKEA habit to sometimes set targets that we don't exactly know how to reach, and then figure it out on the way. So, you know, we've had our challenges on this journey already, and we have some learnings. But the first thing we did, obviously, was to start the dialogue with our transport service providers. So we don't actually own a fleet at Inca. We outsource our delivery services. So the first step, obviously, is to sit down with your service providers and explain to them what it is we want to do, why we want to do it, and then see, you know, how can we embark on this journey together. But what we quickly realized is that that actually wasn't enough. And now we find ourselves in a position where we're engaging not only with our service providers, but also with OEMs, so we can find the vehicles we need and even co-create the vehicles we need. We are talking to leasing companies to find new types of business models that will enable this transformation. We're talking to energy companies to figure out infrastructure. We're talking to charging companies, of course. And then there's a wide range of startups with different solutions that we're trying to see, you know, can this be helpful on this journey? So all of a sudden, we're doing all this work all at once, engaging with partners we have not engaged with before. But that's what it's going to take if we want to transform. And what we've learned now, I'd say, is that the first few vehicles are really the hardest. So we have the ambition now to just get that first van or truck rolling in each market, because we know that once you see the first vehicles rolling, it's much, much easier to scale. So today we've deployed electric vehicles in 19 of our 30 markets, and we're hoping to see the rest of the markets follow. We have some things in pipeline. And we see that, you know, once you gain momentum, things start moving a lot faster. It's just getting out, you know, over that first hurdle to really see some movement.
Yeah, no, I think you highlight some really good points there that I see in other industries, and particularly in this space as well, about the new value chain. Because as you said, you've got new vehicles, you've got new types of energy, you've got new types of business models, you've got different startups. So along that new value chain, being able to orchestrate that and coming from a corporate and coming from the customer side in these services, you're the ones who are going to have to start orchestrating that at the moment, because it's not as it used to be, you know, in traditional internal combustion engines, where you can take any vehicle and go along to any fuel station. These solutions have to be pulled together in that at the moment. And I'm seeing that in so many other industries as well. But, you know, the electric vehicle space very much illustrates that. And then also the point you make about get the first vehicle out there, make it like a minimum viable product, an MVP, which you see very much in the startup space as well. I think you're illustrating that very well in what you've been doing.
I think it's just a matter of getting everyone to the table, because if we want to see this transformation, and if we're really serious about it, it's going to take new ways of working, and it's going to take collaboration. And where we see the biggest and fastest movement is where we come together. We tend sometimes in this industry to end up in a situation where companies are waiting for other companies. So, you know, the manufacturer is waiting for the infrastructure to be built so they can sell the vehicles, but the infrastructure companies are waiting on the manufacturer to sell the vehicle so they can build a charging infrastructure, and nothing happens. So what we see as a key success factor is to get different types of actors to the table at the same time and really sit down and say, right, we want to go fully green in this city. What can we as a purchaser of these services do? What can you as a transport service provider do? What can you as a local policymaker do? What can you as an energy company, et cetera, et cetera? So, and that really, you know, breaks down barriers and allows us to move much faster when everyone can see the role they need to play and everyone moves at the same time, so we don't end up just sitting and waiting. Because if this was just about ripping out combustion engines and replacing them with electric engines, we'd be done much, much faster. But it's actually way more complex than that, and it's going to take some changes in how we do delivery services. But that will change anyway, not only because we want to be more sustainable and be able to deliver goods without polluting the cities. It's going to change because customers are shopping in different ways. It's going to change because, you know, one out of every seven purchases in the world today happens online. And we need to change this industry also to fit the needs of e-commerce without completely polluting and congesting the cities.
Yeah. No, very good on the delivery side. And you're also providing electric vehicle charging for customers and employees. So how are you approaching that? Because that's a different customer group and a different approach.
Yes. Well, like I said, my scope and the interest of IKEA is bigger than just last mile deliveries. It's not a just, but it's bigger. So we also want to enable the many people to move around in a sustainable way. And one of the very first thing we saw, we've been doing this for quite a few years now, is that there's not enough charging infrastructure. And I think everyone can agree about that. And, you know, we might be a home furnishing retailer and our purpose in life is to build Billy Bookcase and sell it in a sustainable way. But we saw a gap here. We saw a need in the market. And we were in a position where we were able to build charging infrastructure. And therefore, we also felt that then we should. So that customers can come to IKEA in electric cars and feel safe that they can charge. So this is something we started a few years ago. And I think we now offer charging opportunities at roughly 83% of our stores and a majority of our centers as well. So now we're trying to make that final push to close the gap and reach 100%, preferably in the very, very near future. And what we've learned a lot from this, of course. And to be very honest, our initial approach maybe wasn't the most structured one because we are a market-led company. And the markets went out, you know, they got the target, set up charging infrastructure, went into action mode, went out, bought the chargers they could find. And today, learning from that and being a few years into this, we have a much more structured approach. We're trying to utilize the scale of IKEA to harmonize across markets, having global recommendations. But all markets are not the same, and I think we need to be a bit humble about that. They're not the same from a cultural point of view, and they're not the same from a legislation point of view. So what we can do in one market, we cannot in another. In some markets, we can allow our customers and co-workers to charge their cars for free. In some markets, that would not actually be legal. The number of charges will differ because the need of charges in Southeast Europe is definitely not as big as the need in, say, Norway, where most of the cars sold are, in fact, electric. So we have to be able to adjust depending on markets. But then, of course, we have some things that apply for all markets. For instance, we want our chargers to be powered by renewable energy. We have strong commitments when it comes to renewable energy. And this is just a great example of where different initiatives go together. So if we take a country like Germany, we have 53 stores. All of them have chargers for customers and co-workers, and all of them are powered 100% by renewable energy. And that's really where the energy topic and the mobility topic can really support each other and amplify each other.
Yeah, I think you raise an important point, I think, about there's different sort of developments in countries, and you can share that learning across them, because certainly I noticed when we took a group of executives from different parts of the value chain in the EV to Oslo and that last year, and you know, seeing the scale and the speed of things there now and bringing that learning back to other locations is so important. And so can you give us some more examples of, you know, the pragmatic getting into action approach that you've been taking? Give some examples across the, you know, the sourcing vehicles, the charging infrastructure, the sourcing the green energy. If you could give us some more examples, that would be fantastic, Angela.
Of course, I can't go into the nitty-gritty details of everything, but yeah, action speaks louder than words, right? Everyone knows that. And I think commitments are great. We have a number of those. But the time for just making commitments and plans is over, and we need to be in action mode now, or this will all be too late. But it's about, you have to be open to changing your ways of working. So one example, of course, that we're very proud of is the fact that we offer 100% electric deliveries in the city of Shanghai. This was one of our first ambitions too, to take a few cities across the world and make them 100% electric by 2020 already, and Shanghai was one of those. And it went very fast from deciding we want to go 100% electric in Shanghai to actually being done. Took less than a year, and now we see that we have several cities in China already offering 100% electric delivery services. And part of that was, of course, yeah, we teamed up, of course, with our service provider, who was very committed and wanted to make this change happen together with us. But we also engaged with an EV sharing platform. Now, this is a completely new thing for us. We've never used an EV sharing platform before. We didn't even know exactly what it was. But it was something that allowed us to cut months out of the implementation project, because we could all of a sudden access vehicles and chargers much faster. And now we have a triangle of partners instead of just us and our service provider. So it's about finding those companies that can support you and that can make it happen much, much faster. But then, yes, we're a very practical company. We learn as we go, like I said before, and if we hit an obstacle, we try to solve it when we get there. So, of course, one of the main challenges for transforming to electric delivery is charging infrastructure. It's not there. And then we have to make the decision as a company, are we then going to pause our efforts and wait for someone to build it, or do we build it ourselves? In our case, yeah, we're going to build it ourselves then, just to push through these barriers. And this alone, the charging infrastructure alone, is such a complex issue, and it has forced us to really think outside the box. So in some places where we've had real challenges, even with where to place these chargers, like in the United States, for instance, where our amazing colleagues had to go to completely different partners, to colleges and to churches, and say, look, you guys have a lot of parking spaces. They're empty during the night. How about we set up chargers? We utilize them at night when it's just empty, and then we find ways of working together on this, which is, of course, a very new way of working to IKEA. But that's what's happening right now. We have to always thinking new ways and find new partners. We've found also as we went that a lot of the electric vehicles available are actually not that suitable for our operation. They don't fit our packaging platforms, which means that we can't fill up the vans. Filling rate goes out the window, and then we basically end up sending more and more vehicles to the cities, which might be good for air pollution if they're electric, but will cause a lot of congestion. So then we have to engage with manufacturers to say, look, we need these and these measurements. Can you build this for us? Can we work together to co-create a vehicle that is actually suitable for our last mile deliveries? So it's all about getting practical and finding the how. I'm hoping by now everyone agrees on the why and the what. We have to lower CO2 emissions. We have to do something about air pollution in the city centers. We have to address congestion in city centers as well. And we have to future-proof this industry to be able to handle the enormous flows that are coming from e-commerce. We have to do all of these things. Mm-hmm. And if we do it right, we can achieve more than sustainable deliveries. We can lower costs and we can be more convenient for our customers as well. So it's about taking all parts of your operation and doing this together. This is not a sustainability project for IKEA. I should be very clear about this. This is our customer fulfillment team working very, very hard, finding their ways. They're supported by the procurement team, who's working very, very hard to find new business models for the leasing companies, securing the vehicles from the OEMs, even though we don't even buy them ourselves. It's about the real estate team we have working intensely on securing the charging infrastructure. So this is not a small project or a one-off. This is about building a completely new last mile operation that will serve us for the coming 50 years or more.
Yeah, I can see you. The very much getting into action, like, great points in that you made through there. And as you said, the why is now sorted out. We just got to get on and do it and you know, push this sort of through. You've touched on there the China, the scale, the speed. I've seen that considerably in, you know, the work I've been doing in China for about 13 or 14 years now. And we were in China in November with BYD and at NIO and sort of things like that. It'd be interesting to delve a bit more into the contrast in China with other spaces. And you mentioned about EV sharing platform. It'd be good to understand. You said you didn't understand what that was when you went into it, and I'm not sure
No.
I quite understand. I've seen lots of sharing models and that in China and how business models are different. Could you give us a bit more of an explanation about that and the wider China context and that for there? But the EV sharing platform first.
Yes, well, I'm still not sure I'm the best person to explain it. But it's just that China has taken on a different way of working, partnering with this platform and the service provider to be able to quickly deploy. So basically, it doesn't have to be that complicated. It's electric vehicle sharing platform. You share electric vehicles, which in this case meant that we were able to access the vehicles much, much faster through this platform than if we had ordered them from an OEM.
Right.
And it enables us to have a more agile and flexible equipment supply, basically, which also have made things more cost efficient for us. And of course, the better the business case looks, the faster transformation will go. So that's basically what the EV sharing platform allowed us to do in China specifically. But in general, we are seeing electrification moving a lot faster in China than in the rest of the world, I would argue. Like I said, we already offer 100% electric deliveries in Shanghai, Guangzhou, several other Chinese cities. And in China, we're no longer in deployment mode. We're in scale-up. So now we're just scaling a model we found that works. And of course, it doesn't hurt that in China you have the OEMs producing vehicles that are actually already on the market for sale, whereas in Europe we still have a lot of the manufacturers planning or starting to deploy, or you can't actually place an order for 500 electric trucks. That makes it harder, obviously. In China, you also have the battery manufacturers. You have policymakers very eager to tackle air pollution because it's a huge problem. So we see China as a country that really wants to see this change happen. While we don't see the same eagerness maybe across Europe and North America yet. In Europe, I mean, we have a lot of cities that are pushing hard for change that has identified air pollution as a major problem, and they want to do something about it. And of course, we see all of these ultra low emission zone in London. We see fossil fuel bans and restrictions in different ways, shapes and forms all across Europe. What we're lacking maybe is a bit of harmonization here, where even different cities in the same country will put up different types of low emission zones with different regulations, making it really hard for fleet owners to be able to, you have then as a driver to keep track of, now I'm in London, this and this applies, and now I'm going to Bristol, and now this and this applies, and now I'm going somewhere else, and this applies. So I think it's amazing, and I think it's great that we see cities pushing for this change. I'd wish for a bit more harmonization and regulation coming from government, so we, as a retailer, knows what's happening and know that it's dependable, so to speak. And perhaps the Green Deal in Europe will move things along faster. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, no, great points on that there. And I think, yeah, as you said, the EV sharing and different types of platforms and business models in China, we're seeing some really innovative stuff, as you said, in vehicle sharing, electric mopeds, battery sharing, battery switching for the organizations. And as you said, OEMs manufacturing in China, the Chinese manufacturers like BYD. I was in Shenzhen in November. 25,000 electric taxis on the roads in Shenzhen,
buses in Shenzhen. China, Shenzhen alone deployed a electric bus fleet every month, the size of a normal European city bus fleet. So it's the scale of change in China is so big. Brings with it, of course, benefits, because if you scale like that, cost will get lower. There's definitely a lot of learnings coming from China, and we should look at that. We can no longer, I think, look at China and see them copying the European ways of working as it was maybe, 15 years ago when I was working for a truck manufacturer in Europe. But here the tables have turned, and we also have to look at China and see what are they doing, why are they succeeding where we are not, and take the learnings we can.
Yeah, and they China can become an important part of the value chain, because they might provide the skateboard and the battery, the base plates, but then how is that customized for different uses, different countries? And we've got to roll out all this infrastructure, as you said, to each of the stores and each of the car parking spots where your customers and that are. So, there's a big job to be done. We can't be doing it all, and we need to take the best skills and the lowest costs from around the world. So what do you think we can learn for other organizations and society from what you've been learning here?
I think we should all learn everything we can. I mean, I see initiatives from other countries, from other retailers, from different partnerships that I find very exciting and very inspiring. And this is also part of why we are sharing what we've learned so far, why we are doing webinars about exactly what we did in Shanghai and things like that, because we actually do want others to know what we know. This is not something Inca and IKEA can do in a vacuum. I think by working together and by having a greater push for this, we'll get much, much better results, of course. And if we change the ways of IKEA, then that's great. That has some impact. But if we can be part of changing the entire industry, then, of course, that's much, much better. And I, for one, would like to see a future where companies come together to share not only ideas, but actual solutions. So, where we can share the vehicles, we can share the charging infrastructure, even, work with consolidation, maybe even sharing the same warehouses. So we can keep the number of vehicles in the cities to a minimum. But this will require real collaboration and harmonization, of course. But I think this is the way we need to go, because that will keep costs down for everyone involved, and it will be longer lasting change. And that's what we all want to build for the future, and not to have, build something and then everything's going to change again in 5 years. So I think we all need to look around and see what's going on, what's working well, what should be duplicated, what can we scale, and what did not work as expected, to share those experience as well, so not everyone has to make the same mistakes. So we need some transparency also, plus the collaboration, to really find the best solutions and be able to scale them.
Yeah, no, very good. It's very much what I believe in. for about 20 years now, since 2000, I've been working with corporates in the whole sort of open innovation, collaboration, venture sort of space, and connecting them across these innovative new value chains is very much what I believe is going to work in this industry, in returnable packaging, in new health solutions. There's a lot of collaboration that needs to bring these different technologies and startups together to solve these big problems. And sustainability, mobility, congestion, pollution, and all of those you're really addressing within the Inca Group. That's been fascinating, Angela. Really, really great to hear all those stories and the implementations you're doing. But what do you do to relax when you're not working through these things with the high energy we can see that you've got? What do you do to relax?
What I do to relax? Well, I like food and wine a lot. So I spend a lot of time eating. That sounds really bad. But no, I spend a lot of time with friends and family, eating great food, meat-free, and drinking good wine. And that's really something I enjoy doing to relax. But the thing I do that really allows me not to think a single thought about mobility or sustainability or anything really, is actually football. So I coach a team of 8 and 9 year old boys. There is no way you can stand on a field with 59-year-olds trying to teach them how to play football and how to function as a team. There's no room to think about anything else. So you can't be stressed. You can't think about mobility. You can't think about that meeting you need to prepare for. It's full focus on the boys, on the ball. So that's actually, I think, where I charge my batteries the most. And also to see them grow, of course. I've been coaching these guys since they were 4 years old. And they've all had, you know, their big breakthroughs and their aha moments and like that moment when the penny drops and all of a sudden they realize, you know, what a football is and how it works. And just to see them grow and be so proud of themselves, that's the best feeling in the world, to know that you maybe contributed to that at least a little. So I'd say probably that's the thing I do that keeps me sane.
Excellent. Keeps you running around to run off all that energy then from the food and the drink. I presume you go back to your first thing. So
yes, well, it helps for that benefit as well, yeah.
Angela, really appreciate the inspiring podcast you've done with us, giving us insights to your changing mobility at Inca Group. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun. Thank you.
Please do subscribe for future podcasts. And if you like this broadcast, please give it a 5-star rating on iTunes or the platform that you listened on. Thank you.